Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Berg into Shearer. The magnificent touch gives some rhythm to them. Ripley. Good ball. Alan Shearer. Magnificently done. Just when it was needed most.
Has got it. Michael Hughes scores for West Ham and Manchester United are in deep, deep trouble now.
Blackburn Rovers have their first title in 81 years despite a dramatic last-minute 2-1 defeat this afternoon at Liverpool.
Oh, what did I tell you? John Barnes, now Kenny Dalglish is going to be completely and utterly furious.
It would have cost them the Premiership if Manchester United had won at West Ham, but United's frantic late pressure failed to produce a winner. The result was a one-all draw, and Blackburn were champions by just 1 point.
The news is coming in from Upton Park, and what happens here will not matter, because Manchester United could not win. They have drawn at West Ham, and I've never seen a manager happier when his team has just conceded a goal.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Jonathan Wilson, as ever, is with me. And with us is Ken Early of Second Captains and the Irish Times. Ken, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here, Marcus.
And it's a pleasure to be in your house because we are recording this in the Second Captain's studio.
Absolutely.
Marvellous surroundings, may I say.
Look how relaxed he is, leaning back in his familiar chair. Loris Karius weeps behind him.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always think that is in poor taste, to be fair.
Yeah.
Why dance on Loris's grave? Other people who lack my human empathy just think it's, think it's funny.
Every day is a chance to take it down, Ken.
Yeah.
Every day. Well, today we are talking about a match which concluded the 94-95 Premiership, as it was called back then, season between Liverpool and Blackburn Rovers. It was Liverpool 2, Blackburn Rovers 1. It was, of course, enough for Blackburn to clinch the league title because Manchester United drew away to West Ham. But Ken, why have you gone for this game?
Well, I figured that you'd probably already done the Germany 7, Brazil 1.
No, well, we hadn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe we should do that. I mean, because when I think of what is the most amazing thing
we'll do that game next time we're over.
Yeah, come on. Tim Sherwood played in this one, though.
Right. I almost assumed you probably have done the 2005 Champions League final.
We have.
Okay, yeah. So I figured those two, if I think what are the greatest games I've ever seen, I would immediately think of those two.
So all that was left was this one.
Well, I was just trying to think of a game, like a memorable game that I was at, and this comes to mind. This is the first game I was at in England, and it was a kind of, it was an amazing occasion, but it was sort of also, it just reminds me of that whole era of football, which I miss terribly to this day.
Yeah. Kenny Dalglish, of course, in charge of Blackburn Rovers. And they
Well, they began the day 2 points clear.
Yes.
Of Manchester United. Mm-hmm. So, essentially, a win guarantees them the title.
Uh-huh.
A draw or defeat good enough if United fail to beat West Ham.
Yeah.
I guess one of the odd things about this game is that a lot of people's attention for most of the game would have been on a match that was happening not in front of them, but... Yeah, 2.5 hours by train to the southeast.
Yeah, so it was like all the quaint technology of 1995, as people were trying to keep track of this thing, but by using what were for some reason always referred to as transistor radios.
Yeah,
instead of just radio. Why did that? I don't know why transistor was such an important part of. But the people were clutching these.
I guess because they're not liquid crystal radios. Are that the other type?
It could be, Jonathan. I'm out.
I'm out my depth. I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Yes, trannies.
People were clutching these large Bakelite kind of boxes to their heads, and try to follow this other game. I mean, because. Okay, I remember the reason I was at the game was that my dad worked with like Ron Yates' son-in-law or something like this.
Okay.
Ron Yates, who was then like, I think, the chief scout at Liverpool. And, you know, this game was on, so my dad was able to get tickets for it. We went along, usual, you know, policemen, horses, the smell of horse manure.
Uh-huh.
All of these English football things. but obviously everybody wanted Blackburn to win the game. Everyone in Liverpool wanted Blackburn to win the game. There was kind of a bit of, oh, you know, you should. There was actually fights in the. I remember seeing people like fighting, punching each other in the main stand. Like, this is not by no means.
Well, it's typical English football stuff. You know?
Yeah, but it's like, you know, like, there was a guy wearing a Blackburn shirt, like a Scouser wearing a Blackburn shirt.
I see.
I remember, like, in the row in front of me and, like kind of cheering, like, raucously cheering for Blackburn. Kind of, you know, in a sort of a ha-ha sort of way.
Because they didn't want Man United to win the league.
Yeah.
Well, and also because it's Kenny who's going to win the title.
Yes.
Right? So it's sort of, it's one of their own and it's also not United.
Yeah, completely. So it was like, I think probably the most partisan Liverpool fans were all Blackburn fans. And there was some people who found it objectionable. Yeah. Like it was too much to sort of process this idea that you could be at Anfield and cheer against Liverpool.
Yeah.
Well, there's still kind of a very odd, given what dishonourable practice football is, there's still this sort of sense of honour towards the end of the season. You still got to give your all.
Mm.
You still, you know, no matter what the consequences for your rivals may be, your duty is still to try and win the game.
Yeah.
And while I get that for players who are professional and being paid for it and maybe have win bonuses on the line, fans also seem to adopt that our duty as fans...
Yeah.
Is to take this seriously and pretend it matters. And
some of them, I think most fans can see the bigger picture. Like, you know, for instance,
well, there's definitely a doubt there. Even the ones who see the bigger picture, they've had to at least have the argument with themselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, last season, wasn't there kind of a similar situation with Man City playing at Man United? And, you know, I don't think there was too many Man United fans upset with Man City beating them 2-0 on that occasion. There was another one a few years back when... Chelsea were playing at Anfield and Steven Gerrard actually split his own defence with a through ball for Didier Drogba. I mean, that's how... you know,
well, there was an occasion when, was it Man City away at Everton when Liverpool were under Rodgers? I think Man City won that game 3-2, but at one point Everton had the lead 2-1.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, not sure about this, you know. So yeah. I know what you mean. There is a strange atmosphere.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, a very good atmosphere in the sense that it was kind of like, I mean, there's obviously a lot of tension or fear as well because Blackburn had been in this defensive crouch for about 2 months.
Yeah.
And they had
been.
Well,
Blackburn's run from the 15th of April, they drew at Leeds 1-1. They lost at home to Manchester City 3-2. They then beat Palace 2-1. They lost at West Ham. Then they scraped a 1-0 against Newcastle. So of their six games before this match, they'd only won two.
So they were
wobbling badly.
Yes, yeah. they were nervy. And because, of course, the context of it was Blackburn with this little side who had been promoted just a couple of years before or whatever it was. They'd flown up the league with you know a fair bit of money from Jack Walker, was it? Manchester United had won titles. They were this huge...
United were going to win it three in a row, which exactly. I think is another... You know, at that point, the danger for Liverpool fans wasn't that United would catch their tally of titles. They're still miles behind at this point.
Yeah.
But winning three in a row doesn't happen very often.
No. And it was like Liverpool, Huddersfield, Arsenal, and was there anyone else that had done it at
that point? I think it's just those three.
Obviously, Man United have done it since...
Subsequently, yeah.
Two times.
Yeah.
But the other thing that season was a double-double because Man United had got to the final of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
So they could, that season, have become the first team to win the double-double.
Which did 2 years running.
Liverpool had failed in 88, 89 and 1990 to do that when it looked each time, so they probably would do it. So it was kind of like suddenly this extremely obnoxious Manchester United, which you've got to remember also, that United at that time were really a horrible team in a lot of ways. They were. I mean, this was Ferguson for a long time would insist that the 93-94 team they were real men. You know, that was the real team. That's my best team. But obviously, he was just doing this because he was trying to make his current team work harder or whatever. You know, I mean, I don't know if he really thought that was the best team, but they were an extremely tough side.
We think of the individuals in there: Schmeichel, yeah. Pallister, Bruce,
yeah.
Irwin, Ince, Keane, Hughes.
Yeah.
I mean, he does make a fair point.
There's an edge there, isn't there?
And Cantona. Who was obviously caged at this time. This was 4 months into his ban.
Uh-huh.
Cantona was the best player in the league, and also he was widely seen as an actual madman.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Where can there be a place in the game?
Yeah. Yeah, he should be right out of the game. Or, you know, that... But it was...
A man of such sublime talents. Of such wicked temperament.
That's, so that Jonathan Pearce, mad Jonathan Pearce commentary where his head is about to explode, actually expressed pretty
and the thing
well.
Is, that big commentary is before he's kicked the fan. That's just for kicking. That's for kicking Richard Shaw in the head.
Yeah. And remember, he got sent off twice in like successive games. Was it the previous season? Because he could do that then because the ban didn't kick in immediately.
Yeah, there's a fortnight between bans.
He stamped on like
John Moncur.
Yeah, and some Norwich player maybe.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, no one remembers the guys he stamped on.
Yeah,
you know, but like,
but they remember him.
And obviously he was sort of French and a bit strange and. You know, in I don't want to make out as though 1995 is a totally different, like Victorian times or whatever.
But I know what you mean.
It was a bit like, you know,
a foreign player playing for your club was still reasonably rare.
There's also this grade of foreign, right?
There is.
Without wishing to kind of, you know, draw up some kind of terrible racist colour chart.
Mm. Yeah, you're going on towards like Australian point system here, you know.
We were used to the Scandinavians. Scandinavians seemed to sort of fit in our game.
Yeah.
Somebody French was very different.
Well, more cultured, you would immediately
say. Well, it's a different style of football. It's a different school of football. We're sort of...
But Cantona was, by a lot of people, was a very individual, a strange individual at the time. I mean, the quote about the trawler and the...
Yeah, which obviously he hammed up and of kind course. Of, it was to an extent performative. Yeah. And
but the point, going back to the original point, you're right, this Manchester United side, yeah. You know, were chasing Blackburn. Blackburn were the plucky underdogs, despite having had quite a bit of money and spent big on Alan Shearer and one or two others.
Yeah.
But Manchester United, they had sort of already become or were becoming... the side that dominated the game, as you say, going for three in a row and all that. And they were the team to beat. Everyone hated them because they were so good. Ferguson had got them going.
Well, it's not just because they were so good. Because they were so good and they had that unpleasant edge.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
Ferguson himself was a big part of that.
Well, of course.
Yeah. He was unbelievably obnoxious in those days.
But you're right to talk about the era. That's why it's so crucial, is because people think, yeah, well, of course, that's Man United. But it was still fairly newish. You know, it was only a few seasons old.
And the thing is, you start to build up a critical mass of fans who have been to games where United have done something disgraceful against them.
Yeah. Mm.
And that they then have a specific reason to hate them.
Mm.
So, you know, be it that a referee was brilliant giving a penalty, be it a terrible foul by Keane or Ince or whoever... Yeah, there was a lot of fans had, having perhaps been sympathetic to United, because you do ultimately, time makes you sympathetic to these giants who don't win trophies for a long time. Mm. That's gone by 95.
Oh, yeah.
But what were you thinking about Blackburn at the time, though? Because, as I say, they'd spent a lot of money. They'd assembled this squad that was very impressive. Shearer and Sutton up front. You know, great spine of that side. Flowers, Hendry. Old tactics, Tim Sherwood was the captain, of course, lest we forget.
It's a very British team.
It is.
It's a very classic 4-4-2.
Flaxen-haired Viking 11. Yeah. That's what that was. Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah, Ripley, a very British winger.
Mm-hmm.
In the,
when Wilcox was other side, was he?
Well, yeah, it was Jeff Cannon played in this game, but
yeah, it was usually Wilcox or Mark Atkins, I think, was Blackburn. But like it was kind of the same team. You know, it was like they didn't rotate or anything like that at that point.
And the classic thing, you have one fullback who pushes on in Lasso.
Yeah.
The other one sits back, as it was Ian Pearce in this game.
But also that side, though, it was really the last sort of, if you like, proper British team to win the Premier League. Or not the last one, but Ferguson's United sides had a little bit of a different flavour.
Certainly by the time Kieros had come in, I mean, I suppose that's sort of early 2000s.
Yeah.
I mean, the 99, the treble team was quite...
There was
Jaap Stam and Peter Schmeichel, and then the rest of them...
Jesper Blomqvist.
Ronnie Johnson. I mean, if you get out your racist foreigner chart, we're talking about British-adjacent foreigners in that Man United team.
Yeah.
But they, you know, so they were definitely the better team this season.
Yeah.
There was no doubt that they had better players. But obviously, Cantona being banned completely hamstrung them. Mm. I mean, I think it was a game before the ban, Cantona scored. They did the double over Blackburn. They were a good bit behind them, like maybe 10 points or 9, some number of points like this, but with a game in hand, beat them at Old Trafford. And Cantona scored one of the best goals, one of the best headers. Do you remember the goal?
I can't actually.
I remember it so clearly.
I've got about another 25 Cantona goals going in my head. But
it was a goal that was captured really spectacularly by the cameras, where it was like Giggs managed to win the ball sort of on the left, and then just booted over this really high cross to the far post, and you could see Cantona running under this ball, watching the ball all the way, running towards the far post, and then just getting right to it at the end, putting it right in the top corner. Do you not remember this? The Trevor Francis goal in the European Cup final, that type of thing.
Oh, I do remember it. Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. Liking it to Francis. Yeah,
brilliant goal, last minute. You know, and it's like, well, they're going to do it. And then immediately he does this insane thing and gets banned.
Well,
and
Jonathan Pearce predicted it, didn't he? You know, with his commentary. Was it Jonathan Pearce you were quoting?
Yeah,
you see?
Jonathan Pearce?
We should listen to him more, is what I'm suggesting.
But so then you're like, well, you know, this is a bit of a disaster now. Cantona is obviously pretty important. But United still managed to, because they were just better.
Yeah.
But you were asking about the attitude to Blackburn.
Mm-hmm.
My sort of sense is that because it was an unpleasant United to go up against, the fact that they were this sort of slightly artificial entity.
Yep.
Didn't bother anybody.
People overlooked that, or people were not aware of it necessarily.
And there's also, I think, a sense, you know, what clubs did sort of, you know, 100 years ago shouldn't matter, but somehow it does affect how they're seen. Now, we see Burnley as a grand old club because they won the league in 1960. And because Blackburn had all, you know, the success in the FA Cup in the 1880s, they feel like a proper old club. If Bournemouth had done it, I think we'd have been... Yeah, there'd have been a much greater sense of suspicion. In a sense, Walker's money was restoring Blackburn to the position they'd held 100 years earlier, and that somehow seemed okay.
Yeah, but you know, I think it often does. Like at first, you know,
at first,
in the way that, say, for instance, when Man City won the league in 2012, I think there was quite a lot of kind of goodwill towards that in a way that has
dissipated
since evaporated, you know.
But because they'd been in the shadow of Manchester United for so long.
Yeah, I mean, and the way they did it was very exciting, you know, in terms of just purely as a football spectacle. I mean, it was pretty incredible. Uh-huh. But, you know, there wasn't quite the same people, you know, there wasn't the same ideological, let's say, condemnation of what they're doing. I mean, what Jack Walker was doing was also pretty bad, you know, in the sense that Blackburn were funded by his tax exile wealth. You know what I mean? Like, he was living in Jersey and, you know, did Blackburn have Margaret Thatcher on their board? She was like an honorary board member.
Well, he said he had Jack Straw, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did they have Thatcher as well?
Thatcher as well, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well. Because you know, while
Jack Straw famously presented Condoleezza Rice with a Blackburn shirt.
Yeah.
one of the weirdest images, even by modern British political standards.
I think Jack Straw may have been an actual Blackburn supporter, whereas Margaret Thatcher was just an admired figure by the people on the Blackburn board.
I see.
You know, that kind of way.
Was it just always a cardboard cutout of her in the room? Maybe
I think so. Because when she died, it was like, oh, will Blackburn hold a minute's silence? And then she were like, no, we're not going to.
Yeah, it seems.
In fairness, we haven't seen her around here in a while. So. but like that, you know, it wasn't as though people were. It was all. It's kind of funny with someone like that. Like Jack Walker was a steel millionaire, who people weren't like. Hang on, you know the thing now is like. Why don't any of these people pay any tax? Right? He's openly a tax exile.
Yeah.
He's spending money on like his personal hobby. And everyone was going on about him as though he was like a kid, you know, at Christmas, you know, this kind of way, like, oh, he's living his boyhood dream. Jack, it was just such a sort of soft focus. Isn't this great type of story?
Well, and particularly obviously you've got to be slightly careful what we say, but there is a particular profile of player he was signing. And when you talk of flaxen-haired Vikings, There's a subtext to that, which...
Yeah.
Well, you know...
You have to remember that this is before the modern-day moral compass was around. Twitter, I'm referring to as well. So we didn't have that to vent our opinions. All right, gentlemen, we'll go for a quick break, and then after which we'll talk about Blackburn winning the Premiership title. See you in a minute.
It's Cole. Oh, he's hit the post! Liverpool have equalised. I can tell you that Liverpool have equalised against Blackburn. Still breaking around in there. Cole again! Oh my goodness me! West Ham United somehow survive.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. Right, gentlemen, so going into the game, as we say, Blackburn were desperately trying to get themselves over the line. Alan Shearer had scored, I think, 33 goals in the season going into that game, of course. This was the Alan Shearer that was pre-injuries, had pace, just a magnificent centre-forward.
Yeah, I mean, he was still a brilliant striker by the end of his career, but yep. You're right, that sort of broken ankle and the ligament damage he got, that changed how he played. This Shearer could do anything.
Yeah. He was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was he was, I don't know if I've ever seen any player better, any centre forward better in Premier League. There's you're talking about like the peak of, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, different, like someone like Thierry Henry, Cristiano Ronaldo have a slightly different sort of style of play and so on. But as a centre forward, just he could shoot unbelievably powerfully with both feet. Like, say, for instance, I remember a goal he scored against Man United the season before. Blackburn beat them
2-0 at home. Header and volley.
And both of the goals were great. The first one is a header, but the second one, I remember he basically just ran through into the box. Schmeichel is there, and Schmeichel was quite difficult to score past at the time.
It's fair to say. Yeah.
And I remember Shearer just absolutely battering the ball straight, like over, it seemed like over his head. You know, it was like kind of straight into the middle of the goal on the run on his left foot. And you're just like, he was unbelievable. It's impossible to describe. And it's kind of terrible what happened to him in a way, because so many people remember the kind of slow Alan Shearer, who was really nothing like the previous player.
It's weird to think of Shearer with a bit of pace and
not just a bit, but I mean, he was really quick.
Yeah, okay.
He was really quick. He was really good.
Really
in the air,
strong.
Had two great feet.
Yeah. I mean, you think of him as powerful in terms of heading and shooting, but even more so back then, and also with the pace, and he was more dynamic. Yeah. And I can remember at my school there was often debates of who was better, Alan Shearer or Brazilian Ronaldo.
Yeah,
both of them at the peak. That's not a ridiculous comparison. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a slightly different style.
Yeah,
I mean, Shearer is a very, see, that's the thing. Shearer is the embodiment of a sort of 1950s English striker.
Yeah, he's,
and that's why when he went to Newcastle, and I remember I was actually on a ferry coming across to Ireland for Sunderland's pre-season tour in 96-7 when the news broke.
You know how to treat yourself, don't you?
Newcastle had signed for £15 million,
yeah.
And I just remember all these Sunderland fans in the bar on the ferry. Just a sort of move to spare that kind of falls on the boat.
Yeah, I mean, I do stress that debate we were having at school. Well, we were school kids for crying out, but also it was at the peak of their powers. Obviously, yeah. Ronaldo went on to win a few more trophies than Shearer.
If Ronaldo had gone to Newcastle, maybe he wouldn't have.
Or Rangers was the deal on the table, of course, from Walter Smith. So going into that game, Shearer scored a load of goals. Chris Sutton's waded in with a lot as well. They were a great partnership. And the style of play they liked was very much the wingers hit the byline and whip the balls into two great headers of the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe Michael Cox was telling me that the story that Kenny Dalglish was saying to his two wide men, teams are beginning to work us out because, like, you just sort of pass it wide and then you run and then kick and then they head. So maybe when you get bit towards the box, maybe cut inside. And this was
Stuart's brain.
Ripley was a bit like, hang on, what? So not down the, and this was sort of quite an.
But Ripley was very one-footed. I mean, there's no point in cutting inside.
Well,
what
I think,
do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think they probably maybe just scrap that and then just sort of crack on and see what they could do. But yes, of course, they needed. They were on 89 points, but 42 games that season. Four teams got relegated, of course, going into the match. And as we say, there was a game going on at the same time. And Sky Sports were flicking between the two, Manchester United away to West Ham, and in the game at Anfield, of course, Alan Shearer scores. He gets his 34th of the season. Lovely finish.
Liverpool hadn't worked out to get run down the right and cross it in for Alan Shearer.
Oh, yeah, that's a brilliant finish.
It was a great goal.
It's a classic Blackburn goal. Ripley down the right.
Yeah.
Like Shearer flicks it on. Shearer flicks it out. Flicks with his foot.
Out to the right, into the box.
And runs onto it and
bang.
Absolutely buries it bottom corner. Yeah. Just such a fluid goal.
Well, and the script is written. You know, all smiles.
Everyone is cheering. Everyone is applauding. Yeah. This is hilarious. Ha, 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 ha.
Exactly.
People with their radios. And then it's
people with their radios will be well aware that West Ham were giving United the chasing as well.
But the other thing is about the radios is all the fake goals that because the way that people would know that there'd been a goal was suddenly there's a random cheer.
That's right.
Where the cop starts cheering and it's like, oh, it must be a goal. It's a goal. And then the whole state kind of rolls around the stadium. Yes. And then it's like, no, it's not a goal. There is no goal.
Yeah.
And then this happened like five or six times during the day. So it was kind of like, no one knows what's going on, really. It was kind of like, I remember it being quite a dull game. Like Mark Kennedy was playing. He was like a Irish player who had been signed earlier that season by Liverpool, which was obviously interesting to me. Phil Babb was playing.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing to think of Phil Babb. playing for Liverpool now.
Yeah. So at half time, it's Blackburn.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool hadn't been complete patsies. There'd been that the Clough shot when it was still 0-0. The Scales headed it down to him, and Tim Sherwood had cleared off the line.
Mm.
It was a corner headed down. Yeah, Clough sort of hits it on the turn, doesn't quite catch it. But that could easily have been Liverpool ahead.
Yeah.
It's a pretty tepid first half.
Yeah.
And you wonder what might have happened if Liverpool had got the goal, what would have happened at Upton Park?
Yeah.
Mm. Where United were terrible the first half.
Well, what was happening at Upton Park was Andy Cole having an absolute nightmare. So Andy Cole, that was the other thing that had happened that season. Andy Cole signed for Man United in January for 7 million. And this again seemed like...
And that, Keith Gillespie, was it?
Keith Gillespie went the other way.
Yeah.
So Keith Gillespie... Yeah, 7 million plus Keith Gillespie, right. And that was when Kevin Keegan was standing on the steps explaining to all the Geordies why he'd sold their best striker that anyone could remember. But Cole went to Man United, and apart from he scored 5 goals against Ipswich in one game, he kind of was struggling. Like, obviously, Cantona not being there, everyone assumed was a problem. But actually, when Cantona came back, they didn't really have very good chemistry. Cantona didn't seem to really think he was that good. But... they were struggling a bit, and he was missing chances and wasn't scoring like a goal a game like he was at Newcastle.
Well, Newcastle, again, people can forget Andy Cole's scoring record there was quite something.
Unbelievable.
But do you think it was this season or even that game where Cole started to get that, people started to say, oh, he needs 5 chances to score and that kind of thing? Do you think that was...
I think probably,
it definitely would have reinforced it, yeah.
But people said all kinds of stupid stuff about Cole. Like, say, I was reading in John Durden has a book about Blackburn Rovers where he talks about, I came across a thing that John Giles had written in one of the, I don't know which paper it was in at the time, but basically he was saying, yeah, Cole, he's fine in the box, but it was basically an article about how amazing Shearer was, but like comparing him to Cole is fine in the box, but he's a passenger outside, he's a non-entity outside. Andy Cole actually finished, he's currently 12th in the all-time list of Premier League assists, I think.
But
behind Thierry Henry.
He did notably improve that aspect of his game, particularly after Dwight York got there.
Yeah.
So maybe at this time there was at least some truth to that.
Well, I think the main problem with Cole, he wasn't scoring. The breakthrough moment for him that I remember was actually a game against Newcastle. Do you remember this? I think it was the next season. And he scored
at Old Trafford.
Yeah, he scored an amazing goal. And I remember his set after the game, I just put a bit of welly on it. That was his. But he kind of smashed in a shot like with full, like it was almost like I'm closing my eyes and just hitting this as hard as I can. Yeah. It flies in the corner, and suddenly he kind of seemed to.
Yeah, but he hit the post in his first half. But West Ham had hit the bar through Matty Holmes, and then Michael Hughes had scored a remarkable goal. Really, a good cross from Matt Holmes, and so comes onto it and sort of twists his body to guide this volley into the bottom corner. And West Ham are one up and pretty comfortable. So you've got this very strange situation where Blackburn suddenly don't actually have to win.
Yeah, but they don't know. Like, they're, they could.
And obviously, that assumption would be United would come back.
Yeah. So that was like John Barnes scored the Liverpool goal, which was kind of, which is also a very nice goal. Kennedy, I think, cross. Barnes arriving from sort of right to left from around the penalty spot, side footed the ball into the corner. I can see him still kind of just strolling onto this ball and just putting it, like placing it quite slowly, it seemed, into the bottom corner. And that was like, not sure about this.
Yeah, the celebration's quite interesting as well, because there's sort of an instinctive sort of clench of the fist, and then there's a sort of, oh, was I meant to do that?
Because it was definitely like, yeah, this is, we're quite happy with things the way they were. And so that was that. And then that's when you could see the fear of Blackburn. And fear is amazing. Like, I do think that, the way Doug Leash, after this, this was like his last game as manager. So he quit. And he was like, he became like head golfer, that was essentially what he did.
Well, yeah, Newcastle,
director of football, but yeah.
Director of golf. he immediately after winning the league, and he was 44 at the time. Like, it's kind of...
Managers used to be younger, though.
The managers used to be younger?
Yeah. Yeah, so Busby retired age 58, or 59 maybe.
Yeah.
But obviously Busby had gone through particular circumstances, but the idea was, yeah, he was finished. Like, yeah. How could he possibly manage a team beyond 50? Essentially, the age Jose Mourinho is now.
Yeah, Jose's what, 56 now?
Yeah.
Getting towards the sunset.
Yeah, Bob Stokoe, in 1973, this sort of grey-haired, balding man with terrible teeth, was younger than I am now.
Right. That was the manager?
Yeah.
Well, how long more did he last?
He retired to ill health 3 years later.
Okay, right.
But it's incredible to think that Dalglish only 44.
I know, and he was at the time the bigger name. It's hard to believe now, but at the time was like a bigger name in football than Ferguson was. Yeah.
Well, he became only the fourth man to manage two different teams of a league title, and nobody's done it since.
Nobody has, really?
Yeah, there's only four.
Jose didn't manage to do it, of course.
No. So Tom Watson did it with... Tom Watson, the only person to do it twice.
Yeah.
So Sunderland and Liverpool in the 1890s.
Yeah.
Was he actually a manager is a reasonable question. We can do another podcast on that. then Herbert Chapman, and then Clough, and then Dalglish, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, he was obviously... People could still remember his career, a lot of people, and his playing career, which had been great, and he'd won... He'd been pretty successful as a Liverpool manager, and then the Hillsborough had happened, and he had obviously come under a lot of psychological pressure and had quit. But whereas Ferguson obviously had been very successful in Scotland, but then there'd been year after year of failure at Man United. You know, it was like, and his first kind of team at United had failed.
Yeah.
Like the Neil Webb sort of addition, the Rod Wallace. I mean, they did end up winning the cup, which saved them.
The five big signings that summer, and Palace was one of them, and had a very difficult start.
Yeah, it didn't work. Like, that was the trial.
They spent a fortune on them. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a bit of skepticism. Then obviously he'd failed in 92. Leeds won the league when United should have won, and they choked
up the final months. Yeah.
And then finally it all came to, they got Cantona, and then suddenly it was a really powerful team and they won the double in 94. So, but it was still up in the air. Mm. It was still like, there was no guarantee that this was going to be what it turned into, like dominance for the next 15, 20 years.
Well, particularly after this season when they lose in the cup final to Everton. Mm. And Fergie then seems to have lost it when he suddenly kind of decides he's getting rid of Kanchelskis, Hughes and Ince.
Yeah. I wonder about this, right? Would he still have done that if they had not lost this double? Like he thought they should have won the double. They ended up winning nothing. Would he have still got rid of those players?
Well, but I think with the youth team that obviously we know now, Beckham, Scholes and Co. coming through, I think he still would have brought someone through. But would it have been so emphatic? Who knows?
Because I think Ferguson, unlike Dalglish, I've seldom seen a manager more white with sort of fear of losing, his response to coming under stress in this way, especially in the last few weeks of that season when it was like, oh, we're so close, but we might be about to balls this all up, was just kind of, you could see that he was like really taking this very hard.
But
he looked scared. He looked really tense, drained. Ferguson's response to being in this type of situation was just to get angrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ferguson never looked scared.
When you talk about football being great back in this period, this is one of the things that makes it great, is that teams tied up in the running.
Yeah.
And obviously partly it's fatigue because it's a longer season.
They've all been playing every minute of every game.
Yeah, no rotation.
No one's stretching after.
Potentially.
They're drinking a lot. Yeah. They're drowning. They're trying to control their angst by drinking.
It's potentially playing multiple replays in various cups.
Yep.
And a team could be 5 or 6 points clear, could be clearly better than the rest of the league, and they still might screw it up in the running, because that's what happened in run-ins.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen anymore. Mm. It happened a bit in 2012 when every team bottled it and City eventually recovered.
Mm.
But the bottling it in the running narrative has disappeared from football, and it's a great thing. It's obviously terrible for those managers under that strain, but it's great for us to watch.
Yeah. Well, they start. You saw the fear when, as you say, John Barnes got that equal.
Well, and then presumably words coming through that United have come back into this at West Ham.
Yeah, it's 1-0. So
Marquise has come on.
Yeah, they're going to score.
Leclerc scores.
They always score.
Yeah.
As would be said. But I mean, I don't know if they quite established that. I mean, the Sheffield Wednesday 97 minutes Brian Kidd jumping around. That all that had happened like by then.
Yeah.
The, you know, they already had this reputation for, and you kind of assumed they're going to get.
They were the big boys. You know, you can't really you can't stress that enough. And so as you say, Manchester United score, and then suddenly there's a siege on the goal. And it, as it would turn out, Ludic McCloskey was Blackburn Rovers' most important player that season and goal for West Ham that day. But Hughes had a header, which McCloskey pushes wide, which you'd fancy. It wasn't an awful miss from Hughes, but you'd probably fancy him to maybe score.
Yeah.
And then, as
Cole has a two great chances.
Andy Cole has one. Yeah, which is like half chance might be a bit generous. It's a good chance, and then he has an even better one.
Yeah,
which he misses the first one,
which is in the last 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, McCloskey sort of snuffs him out for the first one, and then it drops to him, and you think, now's the chance. Now is the chance when the equilibrium will be restored, and Manchester United will have pipped this Blackburn side, and they will be gutted because they probably won't be able to pick themselves up for next season, as it would turn out. Blah 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 blah, and he smashes it right at McCloskey, who gets down and saves it. And that's the moment where the neutral, which I obviously was, although wanted Blackburn to win, you think, oh, surely now.
And then there's that enormous scramble in injury time, this sort of rolling scramble across the six-yard line, which eventually, you just sort of can't work out how nobody manages to put it in. There's just always a bit of West Ham body in the way.
It was such an
exciting
end. And
then eventually Tim Brakel kicks it off the line.
Yeah.
And you saw, when that happens, you think, they actually aren't going to score here.
Yeah, it was such an exciting end to the season. I know we've got the sort of the Aguero moment and maybe one or two others, but this was an incredible last day.
Oh, it's definitely one of the best five last days of my lifetime.
Yeah, yeah, I would say, yeah, I would agree.
There's the obvious two, the Aguero and the Michael Thomas.
Yeah.
And this is kind of, I can't think of anything better than this.
Yeah, see, I can't remember Michael Thomas, but this was the first one for me. But of course, we weren't done at Anfield because Blackburn are now, it's very much the case of, Blackburn don't look like they're going to score, and so they are just hoping that West Ham can keep Manchester United out.
But then David Batty fouls Robbie Fowler. The most obvious penalty I've ever seen, apart from possibly Shay Given on Ruud van Nistelrooy. And David Ellery doesn't give it.
Yeah.
And I think Robbie Fowler even gets booked for protesting because it's so blatant. And then Sutton has the great chance that...
Sutton had an open goal.
Yeah, Shearer sort of knocks it past David James.
Oh, so he did. Yeah,
and Sutton just for some reason doesn't put his foot through it, just sort of rolls it goalwards.
And kicked off the line.
It at the goal. Scales just
and Scales kind of
like...
gets in and kind of clears it.
Because that would have put it all back, wouldn't it? That would have, you know.
That would have been Blackburn back in front.
And if Blackburn hadn't have won the league that day, that would have haunted Chris Sutton for the rest of his life.
Well, and then he has another chance where sort of a bouncing ball he smashes and it clips Michael Thomas and spins just wide. That could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the best player in the game was McManaman, who was really a kind of ahead of his time player. You know, if you watch like highlights of football from that time, he really stands out as different from most of the other players.
Great dribbler of the ball.
Brilliant dribbler, but great. What he was really good at was releasing the ball unpredictably, like. As he was running, you didn't know when he was going to pass it. And he was never any good at striking the ball. He was hopeless at shooting, for instance. He would shoot and the ball would dribble wide. I mean, not quite as bad as I'm making him sound, but he wasn't, and he was extreme. Like, even if you look at him, even by the time he was like weedy and skinny, you know, ridiculous physique now to look at, to see a guy like in a top level professional game with like so little physical development. But really good at just... At understanding sort of the movement of the players around him and playing passes that were difficult to anticipate and to stop. I remember he was by far the most exciting player in the game. Like when he would get the ball, it was like, oh, you know, the excitement around this guy. But what, the last minute, Redknapp scored this.
Well, Manaman got fouled by Batty to give him a free kick.
I was looking at it.
It's much further out than I remembered.
It's miles out.
It's a fantastic strike.
And that's what, and that's the thing. I was looking at it again recently. I thought, like, God, I didn't remember this being so far out.
Yeah, because when the foul happened, I thought, oh, they must have sort of moved it 10 yards forward before they took it.
Yeah, but it's not.
But they didn't. They took it from exactly
the
right
place. This is an injury time, by the way.
Yeah, it's an injury time. And he kind of took it quickly in a way. He sort of just had a pop, like almost a short run up and just like, might as well go here. And then just flew into the top corner.
But as he's running up, there's sort of a ripple going around the stadium. The news has come through.
Yeah.
It's over.
It's over at Upton Park.
So it was like this, big cheer. And it's like, well, you knew that the goal didn't matter. So it might as well be like, well, There's no difference between drawing and winning the game from Liverpool's point of view, so you might as well cheer the goal now.
I know that. I mean, they were fourth on the table. They couldn't move up to third. They couldn't be caught by fifth. They were going to the UEFA Cup, whatever. It was a totally irrelevant game to them.
The only difference that this now made was that, well, you know, you've won the game. You can't, you know, because Ferguson would do. Remember that the following season there was the whole Keegan stuff where he was like, oh, Leeds. We all know Leeds, the nature of Leeds, or is it far? I'd love to see Leeds play like that against Newcastle, or, you know, not will Nottingham Forest do this? When you say things like that about Man
City, yeah.
But like, he was doing this kind of stuff. He had done that before. Obviously, we know Liverpool, we won't expect any favours from them, sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, all season he'd been talking about how ugly Blackburn were, you know, how kind of crude and primitive they were, as opposed to the great stylists of Manchester United.
Yeah, of course.
The stamping, goose stepping, you know. But like, he was so good at doing that. Like, he'd just say a couple of things. And one thing about that season was the paranoia of the Blackburn fans actually is like the Man City fans now.
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of the little upstart club against, like, the as they see it, evil empire.
Yeah.
And then the media are all on their side.
That's right.
You know, everyone is on their side, and, you know, and they think we're ugly. And they, to be fair, they kind of were. Like, they weren't. they had Shearer, who was like the best player in the league by miles, but like they weren't.
Colin Hendry at the back.
They had, instead, you know, United had Giggs, and like Blackburn had Wilcox.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't really much of a comparison.
But they managed to get themselves over the line through, as I say, Ludic McClosco's performance for West Ham that day, keeping Manchester United out. But that scene, as you say, when the ball was smashed in by Redknapp, and then
it is a great iconic moment.
The Blackburn fans are cheering. Because, as you said,
it took like a few seconds, and then suddenly the whole ground is all cheering. And so everyone is now cheering.
Exactly.
Dalglish, every shake his hands on the touchline. And
because you saying about at the start of the podcast, Ken, about those fans who were getting annoyed at Liverpool fans supporting Blackburn. You just wait, and it turned out everyone's happy.
Yeah,
Liverpool win. Blackburn have got the title.
So you don't often get that situation where everyone in the ground is celebrating at the same time. So Liverpool fans are all cheering for Dalglish.
The thing that, I mean, look, it's obviously a minor comparison, but the following season, when the final day of the Premier League season, Manchester United went to Middlesbrough and Newcastle were at home to Tottenham, and Newcastle had to get a better result than United.
Yep.
Sunderland had already won the championship. And we were away at Tranmere that day. And their game kicked off an hour earlier than, you know, the Championship game kicked off an hour earlier than the Premiership. And Sunderland were terrible. They'd obviously all been on the sauce all week. I think Kenny Irons had put Tranmere ahead. And then Tranmere get a penalty.
Mm.
And literally as John Aldridge puts the ball on the spot, Manchester United score at Middlesbrough. And Sunderland had three sides of the ground, the two long sides and one of the ends. And as the ball touches the ground, three sides of the ground go up. And John Aldridge is like standing there, just like shrugging, going, what's going on?
Oh, man.
They really like my penalty style. But like, so everyone was cheering. They were singing Always Looking on the Bright Side of Life, because this was a gloating song that Man United fans sang. Yeah. I mean, that was the level of humour in early 90s Britain. This was considered extremely
funny. The band hadn't been honed by Twitter.
No. Certainly not. It was all very, it was quite at a primitive stage. But like, I mean, when you look back, like, Blackburn obviously felt, that's it. It's mission accomplished. Mm. Now it's time to kick back.
Yes.
They all effectively retired along with Dalglish. Whereas Ferguson was like, Hughes, that's the last miss you'll ever make for this club.
Yeah.
You're gone.
Yeah.
Kanchelskis out. Ince, you get out of here. I don't know if he would have necessarily done it if they'd won the double that year. You know, at the time it was difficult for him to do that because everyone was like, what are you doing? It's crazy. You're tearing the heart out of the team. Who are these kids? Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. Maybe it was a plan he would have gone through with anyway. Maybe if he'd won, it would have been even easier for him to do that. It would have been like, well, look, who's going to question the guy? He's just won three in a row. Mm. But I do feel as though the anger at losing to a clearly inferior opponent, I mean, inferior plus Shearer, But in the mood he was in, like, they never had a chance.
No. And for Blackburn, it wasn't that long after they were relegated. I mean, it's very difficult to think that they would ever get back to that kind of level in terms of, you know, top half of the Premier League, let alone sort of challenging. I mean, I know they had, you know, moments.
And under Souness, they won the League Cup.
Exactly, yes. So but yeah,
this was... I mean, I always think when you're a club in that kind of position where you've suddenly got wealth that's sort of not organic wealth.
Yeah.
It's not sustainable wealth. You only have two or three chances.
Yeah.
And if you don't take that chance, it's gone.
But they took it.
And they took it.
Just about. But for
they took it by winning 7 points in my last six games of the season. But they won it in the old style.
That's why Ferguson was so angry. Though. Yeah, but for a place, not catch these.
But for places where, you know, Blackburn's, it's not city. It's not a city. It's small. You know, it's unlikely that because you take someone like Leicester City when they win the league. Well, actually, Leicester is a city. They've got good infrastructure at the club. Blah blah blah. It's conceivable that they could hang around the kind of top six or whatever for a while. Whereas this Blackburn side, it was now or never. And as you say, they took it and...
They seem to... I don't know if you remember the games, like the Blackburn games at Ewood, but they seem to be walking in off the street at the start of the game.
Yeah.
Like the players would come in, apparently through an open gate onto the road outside at the corner of the ground,
yeah,
and like walk in past all this corrugated fencing. And you're like, what is going... Where have they just come from? And there's trees all along the... I mean, it may still be like that. It's a while since I've even seen an Ewood Park game. I don't know.
I think the last time I was there, they played Middlesbrough, and it was the first game where Robbie Savage was ever sent off. So right. Whenever that was.
It's a good while ago, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Maybe he was one of those who only got sent off.
He did, he hadn't been sent off for a long, long time.
Right.
It was his first ever red card. He sort of was very good at getting the yellow and then controlling himself.
I think that's a nice way to sort of finish. We talk about Blackburn winning the league and then we talk about Blackburn with Robbie Savage among their ranks getting sent off. You know, how the mighty fell. Ken, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Not at all. Great
Jonathan,
talk to you.
Pleasure. Cheers, as always. Nice one, everybody. That was the Grits Games in association with the Blizzard, of course, on Football Ramble Daily. We'll see you next week.
Truth is stranger than fiction sometimes in sport. They're losing this game and they're hugging each other in delight. David Ellery calls a halt at Anfield. Liverpool have beaten Blackburn Rovers, and it doesn't matter because Blackburn Rovers are champions.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.